Thank you, Vrindavan Prabhu, Yukavali Mataji, for so kindly opening the doors to your auspicious home. What is the reason your house has lights all over it?
Karan Maharaj, he says that whenever saintly person comes to home, that is the power. So saintly person and his followers are here, so also is the power.
But everyone else thinks it's Christmas. This is the internal significance. Diwali is considered the new year in India. By some, others, Gaur Purnima is new year. In fact, every sect of India has a different new year. Yes? But Diwali represents welcoming the Lord into our homes and into our lives. As Thakur Bhaktivinoda sings in his beautiful song, that my Lord, I offer the ghee lamp of my love to you in the altar of my heart. Ghee lamp means Deepa, Deepavali. It is said that when Ram Chandra liberated the Asura Ravana on the day of Dasera, it was a time of great celebration, representing knowledge over ignorance, truth over duplicity, righteousness over sinfulness, and ultimately the grace of God. Krishna tells in Gita, Paritra naya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. Dharma samstapa narataya sambhavami shukeshuke. That he appears to protect his devotees, to annihilate miscreants, and ultimately to reestablish the principles of religion. So Sri Ramchandra liberated the great Asura Ravana, who caused so many people to cry and to die due to his excessive greed and powerful brahminical yogic siddhis. He was so very, very proud. So proud, he did not even fear the Supreme Lord. Even against the advice of his associates, even his own brother Kumbhakarna, his wife Mandodari, his younger brother Vibhishan, even the demon Marichi, they all warned him, if you do not respect Sita Devi, you will die at the hands of Ram. And not only you, your whole dynasty will be vanquished. But because of his excessive attachment, he could not hear. That is factually the nature of this world. When we are attached to the objects of the senses, that attachment deludes our intelligence. And when we have great false ego, when we think ourselves to be something very special, it is very, very difficult to sincerely hear from someone else and take them seriously. And this is true as a universal principle. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, as a devotee, if you're not humble, you're going to be vanquished in due course of time. However powerful we can speak, however powerful we could manage, however powerful we can organize and do wonderful services, if we do not yet learn humility, we will be vanquished. And people who are proud, even when they are told that Maya is fast approaching, please be careful, this is not the right thing, just cannot hear. So this was Ravana's situation. He was proud and he was attached. So there was the great war in Sri Lanka. And ultimately, Ravana saw all his brothers, his sons, his well-wishers, they were all slain. Jagannath looks blissful hearing about this. Ravana woke up Kumbhakarna. This is the end of Ram. And by the end of the day, Kumbhakarna's severed head came rolling to Ravana's doorstep. Impossible. He was outraged. He sent his son, Indrajit, who had benedictions. He could not be killed. But he was slain. When that news came to Ravana, he did not believe it. He could not believe it was possible. And then ultimately he went into the battlefield. And Ram, with that glorious arrow given to him by Agastya Muni, that arrow penetrated his heart and vanquished his life. So that is Ram Vijayotsav, the festival of Ram's victory. The festival representing all of our illusion being vanquished by the Supreme Personality of God. For a devotee, it represents our total surrender to the Lord. No matter how great and powerful we are, we all must surrender to Krishna. Either we bow down in humility in this life as an offering, or at the time of death we will lie down before the Lord who appears before us as time. Time I am, vanquisher of everything, everyone. Ram was so kind. He explains in Gita he envies no one. He's equal to all. He's everyone's well-wisher. Sri Ramchandra actually loved Ravana. He hated the disease that caused him to behave so cruelly. But he's ultimately the well-wisher of everyone. He actually killed Ravana out of mercy. And ultimately, when Mandodari, his wife, came out and was weeping and crying, she was preaching to the dead body of Ravana. She said, "You see, I warned you. There is nothing more powerful in this world than the curse of a chaste woman. And although you were the king of the Daityas, you were the emperor of the Rakshasas, although Indra and all the demigods trembled in fear due to your power, although you conquered even Kuvera and took his abode, Sri Lanka." Kuvera is powerful because money is power, isn't it?
Yeah.
In this material existence, if you have money, you have power. Money is bigger power than big muscles.
Kuvera is lots of it.
Huh?
Kuvara had lots of money.
Kuvara has lots of money. He also has, he's also strong physically. But he has very, very huge city of gold. But Ravana, by his mystic potencies, when he attacked Kuvara's abode, and Kuvara's his brother, same father, different mothers, but Kuvara is Ravana's brother, his older brother. Older brothers are supposed to be respected according to cultured civilization. But Ravana was envious of his own brother because he had more than himself. So he was effulgent with all his mystic potencies given by the benedictions of Brahma and Shiva. And he came to attack Sri Lanka. And when Kuvara saw this, he went to his father and said, "What should I do?" He said, "You better hide because you cannot stand before Ravana. He's too much." So that was the power of Ravana. But Mandodari, she understood because she was a chaste woman herself, believe it or not. She was the wife of Ravana, but she was perfectly faithful and chaste to him. Therefore, she had powers. Takes one to know one. So she preached to Ravana that because you offended a chaste woman, because you were cursed by her, therefore you were vanquished and your entire Rakshasa dynasty has been destroyed. And now look at us. I am a widow and the whole Rakshasa dynasty is like orphans with nowhere to go. So, Sri Ram felt compassion, and he ordered Vibhishan to perform the last rites for Ravana. I have vanquished all his sins with my arrow. Now you perform the last rites so that he can attain a good destination. And on Sri Ram's order, Vibhishan performed all the last rites in a very, very good, auspicious way for the benefit of the soul of Ravana. When they returned to the other side of the ocean, some of the Brahmins informed Ram that, you know, Ravana was a Brahmin. Who knows his father's name? Who was Ravana's father? Pulastu was his grandfather. Nobody knows. No. I'm not going to tell you. I'm too disappointed that you don't know. So, his father was Brahmin, and his grandfather Pulasya Muni, very, very big Brahmin, and his great-grandfather was Brahma, very good dynasty, but somehow or other he didn't turn out right. Because his father married a Rakshashi, so there was some karma there. They said, but he was a Brahmin. And not only that, he was a devotee of Shiva. Shiva gave him benedictions. So Ram, such a devotee, I mean, he was the Supreme Lord, but exhibiting such humility, he decided, because I have offended Shiva, we should worship Lord Shiva. And that is Rameshwaram, where the Brahmin said, there is a Shiva Lingam at Kailash. You must go there immediately because the auspicious time is first approaching. So Hanuman jumped. Do you know how far Kailash is from Rameshwaram? By train it takes about 3 days. No, more. It takes about a week by train just to get to the area near Kathmandu. And then you have to do trekking, walking, through Mansarovar and then Kailash, very, very distant. But Hanuman just one jump went all the way from southern India all the way to where is today Tibet. And he went to the top of Mount Kailash, and there he found the Shiva Linga. In fact, he saw two, and he decided to keep one for himself. And then he jumped down. But meanwhile, the time was already approaching. The Brahman said, it's very inauspicious unless it is done immediately. Hanuman is not here. So Sita Devi, understanding Sri Ramchandra's dilemma, she made a Shivalingam out of sand with her own hands. Such devotion. And Ram worshipped that. And then Hanuman came. And all the rituals were complete. And he felt very bad. Because he felt that he had not done his service properly. He was late. He was too slow. So he cried. So Ram said, give me your lingam. We will worship that also. In fact, I will give you this benediction, Hanuman, that whoever comes to this place must first worship your Shiva and then Sita's. And today at Rameshwaram, still that tradition is there. The Shiva Lingam was made by Sita's hands. And there's another that was brought by Hanuman. So Sri Ram performed so many wonderful activities of encouraging Vibhishan. He was going to coronate him as the king. These arrangements were being discussed. And then with the Pushpaka, yes? The carrier of Kuvera that was stolen by Ravana, they decided to return to Ayodhya because the 14-year exile was complete. But where was the first place Ram wanted to go before Ayodhya? Who can say? He wanted to make one stop for a very, very deep spiritual reason before he entered Ayodhya. Place called Nandigram. Nandigram was the place that Bharat Maharaj was residing. If we remember, when Ram was exiled to the forest for 14 years by Kaikeyi, Bharat was supposed to be coronated as the king. By the time Bharat returned, he didn't know anything of what happened. Ram was exiled. Dasarath had already left his body in separation. So Vasishtha Muni and the other sages said, Bharat, we have to have a king. You are the person who is supposed to be king. You must be coronated. But Bharat could not tolerate this thought. He pleaded with Kausalya, he pleaded with everyone to understand he had nothing to do with this horrible conspiracy. He said, I will go to the forest and I will accept the 14-year exile and send Ram back to be king. So they had a big procession to Chitrakoot on the bank of Mandakini Ganga. I'm very much summarizing for your pleasure tonight because Prasad is getting cold. So when Bharat came, he had already gathered the water from all the holy places in the world to coronate Ramchandra as king. But Ram refused. He said, I will stay in the forest for 14 years. Bharat begged him, pleaded with him. But Ram ordered him, you go back and you take care of the kingdom. So they took all those waters and poured them in a well. Have any of you been to Chitrakoot? There is a place called Bharat Kuf. Very holy place. That is the place where Bharat put all those waters, because Ram would not accept the coronation. So that well, to this day, if you drink water or take bath, it is considered that you have gone to all the holy places in the world. And also the place on the Kamagiri, the Chitrakoot mountain, to this day still is the footprints where Ram and Bharat embraced. When they first saw each other and embraced, their love was so intense that the rocks under their feet melted and their footprints sunk deep into the rocks. There's also the footprints of Kausalya, where she embraced Sita, both of their footprints, and Lakshman, where he embraced his brother Shatrughna. It's a very holy place. And people, first they bathe those footprints, and then they take the water that's in the footprints and drink it as Charanamrita. Hare Krishna. So ultimately Bharat placed the paduka, the sandals, before Sri Ram. He said, if you're not willing to go back, then at least let me worship your lotus feet. So Ram, for just a moment, put his feet in those shoes. And Bharat was such a devotee. Such a devotee. He didn't even enter Ayodhya for 14 years. He ruled the kingdom from Nandigram. Nandigram was a very isolated, dangerous forest. Very thick, dense forest. And there he just made a little straw hut, exactly like Ram's was in Chitrakoot, but a little less. And he slept on the ground, on stones. And he only wore tree bark. And he only drank cow urine. Sometimes he soaked some grains in it. And he had the shoes of Ram. And he, with such humility, although he had to rule the whole kingdom of Ayodhya, he would present all of his ideas and gain permission and prayer. He would offer always to the paduka, the shoes of Ram, which were on the throne, and he worshipped as the king. For 14 years. That is very difficult. Because to be a king, you need to have crown. It's actually part of the service. It's not that Yudhisthira Maharaj and Parikshit Maharaj or Rishabhdev Maharaj or all these great kings we hear about, Ambari, it's not that they wore big crowns and sat on thrones and had all kinds of opulences because they were enjoying those things. But to be an emperor, this is just part of your service to attract this type of awe and reverence from people. And when you have that type of awe and reverence, you have power to dictate them. And ultimately, you're dictating them for their protection as a servant. So great kings, they sit on throne and wear big, beautiful diamond ruby crowns, better than the Queen of England. But they're doing it as a humble service to God and the citizens. There's no ego. Do you know how difficult it is to rule with nothing? When you're only dressed in tree bark? And he had matted hair? And he lived in a thatched hut in a deep, dark jungle? Hare Krishna. In this way, for 14 years, his heart was utterly immersed in service, in separation from Sri Ram. Now, Lord Ram is the super soul in everyone's heart. And he's reciprocating always with the love of his devotees. Who is a greater devotee than Bharat? Such an offering of love for 14 years he offered. He would have never been the king, but he had no choice. Ram ordered him, you go back, you be the king. The whole Raghu dynasty, you be the king. So he carried out the order. But he did it with utter, utter simplicity, renunciation, and pure devotion. So the first person Ram wanted to see after this 14 years expired was his dear devotee Bharat. Hanuman went to Nandigram, and Bharat was sitting, worshipping the padukas, the feet of Ram, matted hair. He was emaciated from 14 years of fasting and severe tapasya. And when he was told by Hanumanji, Sri Ram is just now coming from Nandigram, he wants to go on procession to Ayodhya. Now when Ram was coming, the citizens of Ayodhya, they put lamps all over their homes, everywhere, to welcome Ram back into their home, into their lives. So Sri Ramchandra was seen by Bharat at a distance in the horizon, and Bharat was simply weeping and weeping and weeping in expectation. After 14 years, he will see the Lord of his life. And when Pushpaka descended, Ram came off his chariot and embraced Bharat. Bharat fell at his feet, and Lord Ram picked him up and embraced him and bathed Bharat with the tears of his love. And Bharat bathed Ram with the tears of his love. The two of them became so emotional in this reunion that they could not even speak. Their voices faltered. This is the love of the Lord and his devotee. The Lord revealed this to the world. They discussed so many wonderful things. In fact, there's a beautiful lake there. And have any of you ever been to Nandigram? Raise your hand if you have been to Nandigram. This is just outside of Ayodhya. There's a big lake. Many tears fell to help form that lake from the eyes of Ram and Bharat as they met there. And soon, a royal palanquin was brought from Ayodhya. And the whole of Ayodhya, just decorated the whole city, which was like a desert for 14 years, to welcome Ram back. There were millions and millions of people lining the roads. Sri Ram, with his matted hair and tree bark, stood on the palanquin and entered into Ayodhya. People were crying and fainting and singing and dancing, showering flowers, offering lamps, offering garlands, offering their love. Every home of Ayodhya was decorated so beautifully. The doorway to the home to offer that this home is yours, my Lord. This home is yours. My family is yours. My wealth is yours. My life is yours. Everything is yours. It was a festival where everyone offered their lives and souls to Sri Ram as they welcomed him back. And then Vasishtha Muni shaved his head and put upon him the garments for Abhishekam. The Abhishek was performed, and then they placed the royal crown on Ramchandra's head and put the robes of a king upon him. And this was the moment everyone was waiting for, longing for, living for, in great separation. This is the significance of Diwali. In Krishna Leela, this was the day Krishna stole the butter and was ultimately bound by the rope of Yashoda Mai. Sri Ramchandra appears so sweetly as a little boy to be conquered by the love of his mother. In Krishna consciousness, nothing is simply ritualistic. Every form, every action has a devotional and emotional reason. For Diwali, when we put the lamps in our house, traditionally, they're candle or ghee lamps, but the Americanized version is electrical Christmas lights. But what is important is not whether it's ghee lamp or whether it's Christmas light. What is important is, what is the emotion? What is the intention? What is the aspiration of the heart? That is all important, because that is what the Lord accepts. Because I have seen people offering very, very pure ghee lamp, very, very pure cow ghee, and very nice lamp, and they're offering it to Kali before they slaughter a goat. Hare Krishna. So do you think Krishna's happy with that ghee lamp offering? Kali's not even happy. Kali's disgusted. She's just, because she's in that role, she has to accept these things. Huh?
That's a beauty.
But even if it's just an electrical Christmas light, you just turn, switch, and everything, 1,000 lights go. What is that temple? The Guruvayur, and also the Ananta Padmanabh temple in Trivandrum. What is the new name of Trivandrum?
Tiruvananthapuram.
That's the old name that became again. They have at those places the whole, even Udupi they have, where all the whole temple, big, big temple, all the way around it, they have thousands and thousands and thousands of ghee lamp holders. And for the night festivals, sometimes every night they do it. Hundreds of people are going around with, and they bring their own ghee too. The temple has some, and they're just filling up all the ghee lamps, filling up all the, takes hours and hours and hours and hours, and they're just, they all have these little special little brass containers, yes, with a spout, and they're just filling each little ghee lamp about this big, and there's thousands of them all the way around the temple, up to from the bottom to the top. Then they're making all these ghee wicks, and they're putting one in each one. Then they're going around and lighting it. You have seen Yugal Kishore Prabhu. How long does it take before they light all the ghee lamps from the time they start filling them?
They start in the evening, it takes a lot of time.
Huh? Assignment. Remember, it takes a lot of
time. How much time?
Many people will be there, and the wall is like. They start in the afternoon. People.
Takes many hours.
Hours.
Many hours. And hundreds of people sometimes are working for hour after hour after hour after hour. And finally, when it's dark and everything is prepared, then they're all lighted. Everybody just takes hours just to light them all. And then the whole temple is just flames this big, just covering the entire outside of the temple, the parikrama. How beautiful. And then they have elephants doing procession around it, or sometimes they have palanquin processions in Udupi. Very, very beautiful. Really a labor of love and devotion. And on Diwali, they especially even get more lamps besides those. And here in America, you just flick a switch. Thousands of lights illuminate. Yes, Vrindavan Prabhu.
4 hours.
Took 4 hours to put up the lights. Huh? Yes, and Malati and her GBC role is thinking how many hours Ikavali has had to work at the bank to pay for the electricity. But actually, whether you put light or whether you put lamp, Krishna accepts the bhakti, Krishna accepts the devotion. Krishna sees the purpose in which whatever is offered. If we're offering our house, offering our life, our wealth, our everything as a service to the Lord, as a service to the devotees, that is actually the spirit of Diwali. It's not a ritual. It's the genuine, sincere offering of the heart to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To welcome the Lord and His devotees into our hearts. So today is very auspicious. We thank you, Vrindavan Ikavali, for having this nice festival and for helping to inspire us to understand the spirit of this. And please, whatever we do in Krishna consciousness, from bathing to putting on our clothes to putting on our tilak, whatever we do, we should be meditating on the spirit of why we are doing it, what it means. Smarta Brahmins are attached to the form of the rituals. Vaishnavas are attached to the spirit of why it is done. And even if the rituals are not done according to the orthodox techniques, Krishna's happy if the spirit of why, the spirit of devotion, is expressed from our hearts. You know the story of Shabari in Sri Ram Leela. Rupanuga Prabhu has been hearing this since he's embryo in womb. She was the disciple of the great Muni, and all the disciples with her guru, went back to Godhead. But he told her, you have to stay. You have to stay because you are not yet completely pure. But someday Ram will come, and then he will purify you, and you will be ready. So in separation, she waited year after year after year, living on the banks of Pampa Srovar, performing severe tapasya, living in a cave. And ultimately Sri Ram came. And she was so eager to please him. She got fruits. She was living in forest. She got fruits. But these fruits, the nature of them is you can't tell by looking at them whether they're sweet or bitter. They could be horribly bitter or deliciously sweet. But the only way you could know is by tasting them. So she was taking a bite out of the fruit, and if it was bitter, she'd throw it away. And if it was sweet, she'd take it out of her mouth and offer it to Ram. Now what pujari would dare to do that? Raise your hand. If you did that, what do you think your destination would be? Any guess?
Help.
Huh? We're reading about it in Bhagavatam class today. Such an outright sin, deliberately tasting and giving to the Lord. But because Shabari was so simple, just such a simple heart, she just wanted to please Ram, that's all. She didn't know what is an offense or what is not an offense. She just wanted to give some nice fruit to Ram, and this is the way she knew how to do it. Ram was completely satisfied. He was more happy taking the food out of her mouth than he was taking the very, very opulent prasad, bhoga, opulent bhoga, offered with the most awesome chanting of Vedic mantras by the demigods. He was happier with Shabari's fruit because her intent, her purpose, her love. So, of course, we cannot imitate Shabari. We must do things according to the standard processes as far as possible. But at the same time, we should understand what is the purpose of the whole process as a means to express our intent to humbly serve and please the Lord, to offer our hearts to the Lord, to offer the lamp of our love to the Lord in the altar of our heart. That is tonight's meditation on Diwali. I thank you very much. Hare Krishna.